Hey guys, so something I'm going to tell you up front. This podcast did have some audio issues. We were redecorating the media office at the time, and unfortunately, we didn't realize that we didn't set up the microphones exactly as needed to. Thus, the audio isn't as good as we would personally like. However, the person we did have on the podcast was a person called Debbie. She was absolutely fantastic, someone who worked as a police officer and now works in a custody unit, just where they keep the prison mates or people that have been arrested. I absolutely love this podcast, and I think the content of the podcast is so valuable and so amazing that I really do want you to listen to it regardless of the issues with the audio. I think you're going to love it. I think you're going to find it amazing. And either way, we're definitely going to bring her back again because she was absolutely a delight to speak with. I hope you guys enjoy.
No, you can. No, that's fine.
I've got about 15 different words here.
No, that's fine. I trust you to do it. It would be interesting for you to send me it so I can listen to it afterwards because I can have a laugh in my other half. Yeah. It's like, oh my god, you can do that. Yeah, do that. Yeah, send it. Yeah. You got my email address, didn't you?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll do the introduction later and we'll just get into it. You're already filming now.
I'm already recording.
That's rude.
Quite nice.
You didn't even tell me you were filming.
Are you?
Yeah.
Where's the camera? Oh, is it there?
It's hidden.
I've improvised. With tissue boxes.
Oh, I like that. I like this too. You were a girl guide, weren't you?
Because no one can see this on the other side of the camera, but it's literally sitting on a cup and a box of tissues.
Blue Peter, eat your art out.
Yeah. We're professional.
Yes, we are. So are. I'm impressed.
Just tell me I didn't get
a sip of that cup.
Yeah. I'll still drink from that cup.
She didn't even ask you. That's really rude.
So we're today joined by Deb, who's an officer of the Metropolitan Police Service. See, I told you I was going to get it wrong. Designated detention officer.
That's correct.
Now correct me. Oh, was that correct?
Designated detention officer, or DDO for short.
DDO.
Yes.
I'll forget that as well. I'll probably mispronounce that.
That's fine. That's fine. Don't worry. We get called more worse things, believe me.
How are you today? Let's start there.
I'm good. Yeah, it's a rest day. It's a day off. Yeah, so
we said arrest day.
No, I've not been arrested today. No, it's arrest day, as in it's one of my days off. So I'm not back on shift until Friday morning, about 6:30, 6:45.
Brilliant. And we're happy because you chose to spend some of your time off.
I did.
Here.
Yeah, instead of dyeing my hair.
Nice.
Yeah.
I was planning to dye my hair today as well.
Yours will be quicker than mine.
So. Let's just start. We'll go back into your past. We'll look a bit into your story and how you ended up where you are now. So, at what point did young Deb, 9 years old, went, I want to be a police officer?
Oh, it was earlier than that. I think it was seeing my first police car or something on telly. It was, I've always been a tomboy. I've always been a tomboy. So, you know, I even ride motorbikes now. Only because I couldn't do it at 5. But I didn't do the beautician air hostess phase. I just always wanted to be something physical, either something sporty or something to do with whether it be ambulances, fire engines, or ultimately the police.
Pause.
Yeah.
Bring it closer to you.
Okay.
The whole thing, pull it, give it a big pull.
Oh, I'm so heavy-handed.
Honestly, you can't break it. But we'll try again. If I put my hand up, it's pause.
Excuse me. Oh, cough away. Excuse me. That is asthma, not COVID.
That's fine. And continue.
Yeah. Are we going to start with me?
No. Continue. Like
everyone started looking at me. I was like me.
Yeah. Is it me? Your cue.
Yeah.
Because I think it's interesting. Because a lot of people, I think, when they're especially young, I think even my daughter at the moment would love to be a police officer. She's obsessed with Paw Patrol at the moment.
Oh god.
Yeah. And is it Chase? I think is the police
That's
dog.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's always kind of interesting to me because I think so many of my friends want to be a firefighter, a police officer, a doctor, but I hardly meet people that sustain that dream. And make it into fruition. So was it a case of once you saw your first police car, you kept that motivation to keep striving for that?
I think it just fascinated me. It just looked exciting. It was adrenaline. And then you see the programs on the telly. Obviously, more recently would have been The Bill. But when I was younger,
I can't even remember the bloody name of it, but it was lots of police programs, orientated programs, Police 5 with Shaw, was it something Shaw? I remember him. And just investigating, I just thought it was really exciting. It'd be something to do. And I didn't see myself ever thinking it could be boring. And that is one thing that's proved me right. It is not boring. Every day is different. Whether you are in a car, whether you're on foot patrol, or whether you're in custody dealing with them when they get arrested, it is... You're constantly on your toes. There are, I don't want to say the word, because we don't say quiet in custody, because normally if you say the Q word, it basically all goes Pete Tong.
It's like jinxing it.
Yes. If somebody says the Q word, it's like, right, cakes, it's your fault if it all goes wrong. So we say karma or QT.
Okay.
But, I think it's a case of that there were so many ways you could... sort of divert off it, and there's so many different regions in the police force. Obviously, things like marine police, dogs, horses, other mounted firearms, diplomatic. There's so many different regions that you could find your niche. You start off doing your basic probationary, and then you could join different areas of the police which take your fancy, or just experience a bit of both, and then that way you're learning a diverse sort of amount of different areas of the police. And then that way you find one, you think, yeah, I like this, I'll stay with it. But for me, it was just doing things like the cars, what I call the Gucci stuff. The stuff, the Gucci sexy stuff, the stuff that keeps it exciting, but even then you can't even really go home and talk about it because you're not allowed. But it's stuff that kept it inviting, you wanting to stay in the job. And then obviously as I got older, I just thought, oh God, I'm not as fit as I was. I just think I am. And I'm not Wonder Woman. And I need to maybe just take a little step back and maybe find something a little tad easier, hence why I went into custody. And I'll be honest, and I know they're words you just say, but I do love my job. I do like my job. I like helping people. I've always been someone that helps people, and even though I find it very hard to ask for help myself.
And I can imagine as well, like, it might be even hard to help some people that are in custody because they might not want it as well.
Oh, very, very much so, yes. I think it's finding what they need.
Mm.
And sometimes it's not a case of whether some people come in needing help, as in with addictions. They could be alcoholics, they could be shoplifters, anything. They will do things. You find shoplifters will just either steal for a thrill, or they will steal to fund a habit, i.e. drinking or drugs. And as you say, when you're at the cell and you're talking at them at the wicket, which is the door that opens up in the middle of a cell door, you're going to get maybe two or three things happen. You're either going to get shouted at, you're either going to get tears, or basically they'll shout at you things like, I need to see the doctor, I need this, I need to get out, I need to get home. And a lot of it, I admit, is negative. It's not all positive stuff.
No.
But I find, for want of a better word, if I go into mummy mode and I listen, and half the time they want you to listen, they need for you to listen, and half the time they don't even know what they're in there for, especially if they're either one in shock, first time in custody, it's very overwhelming. So you try and tell them, the ones that are willing to listen will listen, you tell them that there's obviously a process you need to go through when you enter custody, i.e. you be told what you're there for, you're told of your offences, the process would be maybe gathering evidence, CCTV, statements, things like that. Or sometimes you're there for a drink drive, so you're there just to sober up, and then they'll process you for court. Or put you on the EBM, which is the evidential breath machine, which will mean that obviously they don't release you straight away, because you do get some pillocks that will just go straight back to their car and get in it, and they're still over.
Oh my goodness.
Which is, 35 milligrams of alcohol in the blood, basically, and they will process and prosecute over 40. And you get 3 chances of breath, and they take the 2 lowest. So sometimes you do get frustrating detainees that will shout at you, and I've had some really nasty things thrown at me. I think the worst has to be spitting and urine, if I'm being honest, but it's not nice. But then there are some that, on the positive side, they just want someone to listen to them, and sometimes they want to cuddle, but it's not appropriate to do so. Sometimes the kids, you get a lot of utes in, as we call them, youths.
I think I used to call them utes as well when I was young.
And obviously, some of them are just an absolute nightmare. Some of them are there because they've been part of a gang, so sometimes it's a case of that they feel they have no choice. You'll find that a lot of people will join gangs because they do it for the protection, or they feel the need to belong. And the amount of times you hear people, they come into custody, they're searched, ultimate layers of clothing just to hide things that they've got on their persons. But then you hear the sad stories that the fact that they've armed themselves and somebody's managed to get that off them, whatever that may be. Anything from knives to bike spokes. That was a phase at one point, bike spokes. Because when
bike
you got,
spokes?
Yes, if you got stabbed with a bike spoke, it would do a lot of damage. It's very long.
What's
and
a bike
you can,
spoke? I'm trying to remember.
You know the spokes on the bikes? People would actually get assaulted with those, and they're very hard to detect. Because they could look like an injection site or just a small puncture wound, but you imagine the damage that goes in if that goes further into your body. They're inventive little buggers, basically. And not only do they have their initiation things when they're trying to incorporate like youngsters into their gangs, it's just, you hear the stories when they're in the cells. And then when it boils down to it, all they want to do is find their mum. All they want to do is talk to their mum.
And I can imagine for a lot of people, it's when they get to where you are in the detention centre. For a lot of people, that's the first time reality's hitting for them.
Yeah.
Because I can imagine the whole process of being arrested, getting in the car, it can feel very surreal, and it's only that time when you're in that place, you've had some time to sit for yourself. I can imagine you're seeing a completely different side to a lot of these people than you would have seen when you were patrolling before.
Yeah, well, I used to do the arresting. So I'm used to them being, well, I don't want to be arrested, and they put up a fight and stuff, but predominantly it's then the caution and handcuffing. Obviously different ways of handcuffing, because some people do not want to be handcuffed and they make it very hard for you to handcuff them. I can remember one incident when I tried to stop someone running away that I actually handcuffed their ankle to their foot because it was the only way I could stop them getting up because they got the better of me. And I thought, well, I'm sorry, mate, you ain't getting away. So I literally handcuffed his ankle to his foot and he couldn't get away. So, yeah, problem solved. It worked. It looked weird, but it worked. But in custody, when they do come in, first-timers, obviously, it's kid gloves. They're on a camera cell. They're you look after them. And as I said, then you get the old lags, the ones that come in. And they'll come in and they know more about the job than you do, of course. And then they tell you they know more about the job. And then, the other thing, which everyone must have heard of, is I pay your wages.
That old
one, that old chestnut. Yeah, we pay your wages. You've got to do as you're told. You've got to do this. Well, no. Nice try. Think again, mate. And they can kick off because they tell you stuff. I want this. I want that. Get me this meal. Get me that drink. Get me this. I want a solicitor. I want that solicitor. And they have the solicitors that they use for duty, because duty solicitors are free, and they will use the same one if they know it helps them.
Yeah.
For whatever reason they've been arrested for. So yeah, you do get your ones that are quite scared, and not just the kids, but sometimes the adults.
Yeah.
And then you get the ones that are the old lags that just basically get in. They'll cover themselves in the blanket and they'll just go to sleep and wait for you to get them out for interviews and stuff. And it's very interesting. As I said, it's it's different every day.
I can imagine. I remember once I was arrested. I wasn't I don't have any criminal history or anything from it. Ironically, it was at the time they arrested me on suspicion of carrying a knife.
Okay.
It was actually a very, very nerdy reason I was arrested. I was very much into anime when I was like 14.
Oh, yeah.
So I managed, my friend, it wasn't even me, my friend, which sounds like a typical excuse, it's my friends.
It's my friend, for him.
Yeah. But my friend had a a replica of a short Japanese katana. It's called a tanto.
Oh, katana sword, yeah.
Yeah, but it's a short version. It's called a tanto. And it's purely decorative. It wasn't sharp. It was actually hilariously broken to the point where if he did try anything, it would actually fall apart. But of course, this was in Peckham, and it was at a height of crime that was happening there at the time. And my friend got it out of his bag to show me, and I remember it still. I kind of started opening it, and then I had this like hand reach behind me, and it was just an officer, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, he took it straight away. I remember it was two officers, and I remember at the time I was very calm. I was like, "Oh, it's just it's a decorative thing. It's not sharp. You can look at it if you want."
How old were you then?
14, I think. Oh, I was.
That's still scary.
Yeah. But I remember I wasn't scared at the time because I was like, I know I'm not doing anything wrong. At least I believed I wasn't.
Yeah.
It's not sharp. It's purely decorative. It like literally it was like a rectangle, the blade. Mm. And I know it wasn't mine. I know my friend was there. He was arrested with me as well. So I wasn't intimidated. And I don't know why, but they were struggling to get a car over there to take us to the station. And would you be happy to walk with us? I was like, yeah. I was fine with it, but I never really feared police officers when I was younger as well. But then like a second group came, handcuffed us immediately, put us in the back of a van. I remember I was in the back of the van, and that's where it all got really scary for me. I remember crying as well at that point. And it's weird because I remember I found it super scary, even though I believe I didn't do anything wrong.
No, the only thing you did wrong was opening it in a public place. That was it, really. Yeah. If you'd done it indoors, nothing would have happened, would it?
No, but I didn't even view that as a problem in my head at the time. Mm. We were later de-arrested. It wasn't a problem. We were let go because when the second group came, I said, you can open it and see. And he went, no, we're not going to open it. I was like, okay.
Mm.
Don't know why. You probably have a reason. I don't know. But I remember it was when I was in there, like that's when it really was hitting me. And my mom came, my aunt came, and we were let go very quickly after, because I think they did an investigation. It was like, oh yeah, this is just a really nerdy anime kid. You couldn't do anything with this thing. But yeah, I remember that was a very unique experience.
It is scary. And I think as well, as you find with kids, especially first time in, they're more worried about when you find the parents.
Oh yeah, do you know, it wasn't even my mum, it was my aunt I was terrified of, because she was a big battle axe. I mean, she was scary to me.
You get more punishment once you get home than you do at the Nick. Yeah, I can relate to that. Yeah.
So you probably have had to deal with kids like me in that sense. I'm sure you've met ones that were in the wrong or ones that were in the wrong situation.
Mm.
I can imagine for a lot of kids, even like ones that have joined gangs, it's wanting to feel a need to belong somewhere.
Yeah.
Even if they've done it wrong and they've done the wrong conclusion, it was just wanting to belong and it's led them to a down path. I can imagine that's hard to deal with to an extent.
It is, because obviously when you're a mother anyway of kids, obviously mine are a bit grown up now, but
yeah.
When I remember I started, my son was that age, and I always used to think, oh god, you know, the most embarrassing thing would be just get a phone call and then they're coming into work, and I'm like, oh my god.
Yeah,
luckily it never happened. I think it's probably because I always used to play good cop and bad cop at home, because I did a lot of bringing up your kids myself. So I think it was a case of not frightening them, but maybe putting into them, instilling them that this is what happens where mum works, and it's not nice, and this will happen, and it isn't cool, it's bad.
Yeah.
Because some things you can do will come back and bite you on the bum later. You could end up with a criminal record. Because
I feel like as an officer, you would have different expectations to how your kids have to act.
God, yes. Yeah, how embarrassing would that be? You turn up with little Johnny and it's like, oh, mum, yeah, not good.
Has that actually happened to any of your colleagues, by the way?
I think it has, yes, but I think they were, I don't know if it was their kids, I think it was their niece and nephew.
Oh.
I have had, let's just say, not direct relatives, but I have had neighbours, and I have had, maybe I shouldn't say this, but people that are directly related to me or connected to me through my children that I know, and I've looked and I'm just like, oh, for God's sake, really? And I must admit, my knee-jerk reaction was, oh, okay. And I ducked down behind the desk and I was like, I was actually more, oh, fuck. And I've literally gone behind the desk and I've crawled under two chairs and had the nearest exit. And they were just like, Deb, what are you doing?
I like the idea that you're the one that feels embarrassed.
Yeah, I did. Because I was booking in. I would have had to book them in. And it's like, oh, hello. And they go, all right. And you just go, no, just call me officer, please.
Because I know sometimes people use different names because they don't want to give their real name.
Oh, to false police pass. Oh, it's an offence to not give your name and address to a police officer.
Yeah.
It is arrestable. And knowing where your address is and things like that. But people don't think that. They just think it's that's crap.
Yeah, they just want to hide their identity. Because I assume they go, oh, guilt. Yeah. Because I assume they think, oh, if I give the wrong identity and the wrong address, they're not going to be able to look me up. They're not going to be able to give me a record. But I like the idea that someone's thinking that, like, yeah, I'm Johnny Eastbourne now.
Yeah.
That's my name. They get to you and you're just like, okay, Katie.
the best thing is not just the names, because obviously them aliases then go onto the record to show that I get known as this or DJ Mustafa and all this stuff, and they've got all these different names.
Oh, did they put aliases as well?
Oh, yeah, we have aliases, and some of them, like, you're scrolling, and you're scrolling, and you're scrolling. but the one thing they do change their date of birth. And there, but then when obviously everyone that comes into custody, you have the right to take their fingerprints, photos, and DNA, and all that happens if you are arrested for the first time. All those go on record. Obviously, if it's all quashed and NFA'd, which is no further action, those are destroyed. But if you come back in a week later and they turn around and they go, "You took my photos last week," and I go, "Well, yeah, you've cut your hair, you've grown a beard. You've cut your finger." Everything is different. Even twins have different fingerprints. So you take their fingerprints and then, whatever the name is, John Smith comes back, "No, actually, you're John Watson. And this is your date of birth." And I go, "Oh, you're an idiot." And they go, "Well, what?" And I go, "You've made yourself older, not even flipping younger." I said, "You know, you're a special kind of idiot, aren't you?" And and like this, and are you British? "No, I'm just white." "Well, I'm..." And, it's ridiculous, the things they do. But the fingerprints will come back and basically bite their bum if they're lying, especially more to do so with the foreign prisoner, especially if they've got things to hide. And then you have other means, then you have to go on to the next step, which will be Interpol and things like that. So yeah, it is interesting, but it does help. And I say this so many, if I had a pound, Jesus Christ, I'd be living abroad. But if I had a pound for every time I say to someone, "Look, just tell the truth. There's one version of the truth. You're telling lies to me, you're telling lies to him, then you tell lies to them. What version of that lie are you remembering or you've told? Are you going to keep track of that? Truth, one version. Get it sorted, get it done, and that's it. Then that way, at least you've been honest with yourself, you've been honest with me, and it makes life easier. Because you play us up and you lie to us, which, of course they do. You know what I mean? They're going to lie to you because they think they can get away with you and they think they know more than you. It just comes back and makes things harder because you've got more investigative work. Obviously, the fingerprints will then do your job for you as well if you've lied. Change of address, everything. And I think we've had an incident where there was a twin, I think, they gave for driving offences. I think it was a drink drive or something. But, giving the brother's details. So it happens. But lying does not get them anywhere because all it does is prolong the process. And basically, when you get arrested, you have... you can be held 24 hours without charge in custody unless it is extended by an officer of rank, an inspector or someone else higher for investigative purposes. Like you need to gather more CCTV or statements, or it's a weekend or a bank holiday, and things that may have been, say, like a burglary, they're not open. So you need to be able to time to investigate. And you don't release that person, because if you release that person, they're not going to come back, are they? They're going to, run to the hills. So you do have the power to hold people beyond that for investigative purposes, but it has to be done properly, obviously, and you need to justify it. So, yeah, it's very interesting, job.
I remember when when I was going through the process. I always wanted to do quotation marks. I don't even know why. Pretty much it was, they didn't take a picture of me. I don't know if that's something that comes later. They did ask if I would volunteer to have my fingerprints taken. I was like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
And I don't think, I probably didn't have to, but I was like, whatever, right? Because I just wanted to be as cooperative as possible. But I think I was pretty much in a room. I don't think I was in like a holding cell or anything like that.
A detention room's slightly different, as I said, they look like cells. But and you have to have an appropriate adult if you're under 18 as well, someone to represent you.
Yeah, so I don't think I was in that. It looked more like a kind of interview room type thing.
Yeah, it can
which
be.
Which, again, I'm this is like 16 years ago now, so I might be misremembering this. But I felt like I was only there for like half hour, and that's probably about the amount of time it took for my mum and aunt to get there. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much when I was allowed to go. So it wasn't like they had a conversation with me when my mum and aunt was there. It was just, okay, you can go now.
Mm.
So I assume they had a duty of, when they brought me there, they can't let me go because I'm 14 until my parents get there.
No, duty of care is called, as I said. It's, and another thing is called Every Child Matters as well. It's this case of, you can't release that person back in to the community knowing that they could be affected by that experience and they could be vulnerable.
Yeah.
Are they going to go home? Are they going to go back home? Or are they going to go back to where you found them?
Hmm.
And, you know, it's, you've got to question all these things as well, because you do have some sort of responsibility as well once they leave your care. Because you don't know how they've been affected deep down in their mind. It can affect them mentally as well as physically.
Was there ever a moment where you felt releasing the child back to community was a harder decision to take?
In some circumstances, yes, because some of these kids were like adults. They were consistent offenders. So, you know, a slap on the wrist is sometimes not appropriate because, you know, little Johnny's going to come back and, yeah, we'll see him next week. And it's a hard... Because it's... They go through... Youth offenders, there's a part of system in Met called YOTS, which is the youth offenders team, or also, is it ASBOs and things like that, they can have things that where, or even tags, where they have to be indoors between a certain hour, and if they have to go to school and come back, or even say for an adult, they have to go to work and come back, they're not allowed to be out in the night hours. It's just a way of controlling their exposure to what brought them into custody in the first place. As I said, that applies to kids and adults, but kids can be referred to YOTS, they can be referred to other schemes as well, or the worst case scenario is they end up at a place which, funny enough, one of my relatives used to work at, it's called Cook and Wood, which is a youth offenders place up near Rochester. Older, obviously, they go into main prisons, but some of them, they do get... That's it. They don't know nothing better than that, so they do reoffend, and they ultimately end up in detention, long term detention.
Because I imagine it can be really hard, because especially, I don't know if it would almost increase your sense of empathy being a parent as well and having kids, and seeing other kids go through these hard situations. Because there must be a part of you that's screaming that you want to help them. Because of course you do. You're a human, but I think the part I would struggle with personally is this idea of I can't. And I think that's such a hard thing to overcome, that idea.
Yeah, you can have empathy, but you can't get emotionally involved to the point that... why can I say this? Well, everyone's innocent and being proven guilty and stuff like that. So you see... But sometimes you can just see it in them. They come in and they know what they've done. Like, people come in and they've arrested because... somebody got killed down the road, they got stabbed and they've died from their injuries. And as I said, the majority of people, they're in gangs and it's tit for tat, eye for an eye. And you know they're just going to be doing this process into adulthood and beyond. They're not going to know nothing other than youth offenders, prison, and hopefully not meet, you know, the same fate that they've done to someone else. Well, that's what you hope. And so then sometimes you see these kids come in and they're like cats and headlights, they're just scared.
Yeah.
And obviously they want to phone their mum, they're worried about phoning their mum, but they need the support there. So you get assigned to youngsters, and as a, like a, let's just say for a word, carer.
Yeah.
So you always say to them, well, if you want to talk to someone, I'm happy to, you know, have a chat if you want to have a chat. And you've got a role there if they want to open up to you. Obviously, you've got to be careful what they say, because obviously their time to have their say is an interview. But they can say things to you that you just think, oh, geez, that's going to be part of the investigative bit. That's, you need to let somebody know they've said this. Like, oh, it wasn't me, it was, Tom Bloggs, he did it, and then he threw it to me, and then I picked it up, and then it's got my prints in it, blah, blah, blah. A lot of it is scared. They're scared, so they either clam up, and then some of them are experienced, so they completely go with a no comment all the time. But some kids are just genuinely scared, and they've made a mistake, they've lost their temper, the red mist has descended, they've done something, and they're so scared, you know you're never going to see them again. So that's what you hope for most of them, but it doesn't happen that way.
I am curious to, because you touched on like the parents coming and like you, yeah, I'm sure some of the parents give attitude, but I am curious to what the whole process is on a parent's side. So let's say I've got a daughter, let's say she's 14, she got involved in a gang fight, no weapons or anything like that, but she was beating up someone on the street and she's been arrested for this. I come down. What's the process on my side from that point? Is it just cut and dry, like, if she's been de-arrested, she's been let off a warning, or ASBO, I just take her over and that's it? Or is there a bit more of a complicated procedure for me?
It depends on what they've done and injuries. As I said, you start off with a basic injury, with, say, common assault, which could be you just leaving a bruise or even poking someone. Then it escalates to ABH or GBH. But if you've come back as a parent and you're sitting there, basically you're another pair of eyes and ears for them, as they are a minor, so you sit in on interviews. You could either be sort of in the cell when they're having a strip search, just to make sure they don't have things like weapons, drugs concealed on their person. As I touched on earlier, there was the thing with the layers. They have a very let's just say regimed way of dressing. A lot of them have a lot of jogging bottoms, a lot of tops, and they will hide things thinking when you pat them down you won't find them. And we have things called wands, which basically detect metal.
That's those like little
They will beep, and we're talking, they will pick up anything to coins hidden in bras, including underwire bras on the females, to keys in pockets, coins, anything, but buckles on belts. You take off belts and shoelaces, because some people are self-harmers. Some people, they can be the strongest people when they're in the custody, even the kids, as you're saying. So you're there as a parent just to basically be there for them on their side, to be another pair of eyes and ears listening. But you take all these things off, because some people, the strongest minds, they can go to pot in the cell. So you take off things which risk to them, like laces, belts and stuff, things that they could either harm themselves with or things they could do damage to the cell with, because anything like that will be, basically you get charged with sort of either damaging a cell, if you hurt yourself with it, hurt one of my colleagues or another member of staff with it. And as I said, then the parents come in, and sometimes they can be more of a hindrance than a help. Sometimes you can see that they're actually shocked, and sometimes the parents get upset. And then sometimes the other end of the spectrum is the parents don't fall far from, well, the kids don't fall far from the tree. And you look at them and you just think, oh, no, bloody surprise they're flipping. Because they've got older brothers or other siblings that are that way inclined. So they literally got no way to go but follow what they know. And some parents aren't appropriate. They have criminal records. Some parents come in and they kick off, because they hate the police just as much as what they've instilled into their children. So it can be difficult, but basically the process, as you said, was they can observe a strip search. They're there for advising whether they want a solicitor, and also they're there in interview. And the worst case scenario is obviously they will have to wait. It's a lot of process in between the interview and the waiting time, so they're obviously in a cell in between that time. And then they come back either for charging, or they come back to collect little Johnny, because he's been either NFA'd, released, under investigation, which is RUI'd, which means basically we don't want to keep kids in custody. Nobody wants to keep kids in that environment any longer than they have to, because it's a scary environment. You're hearing other prisoners shouting and creating and stuff. I mean, when you're a kid, especially first time in custody, you don't want to hear that. It's it's not like it's on telly. It's worse. You see and hear some awful things. So if they're RUI'd, it's because they're released because we think they can come back another day. Basically, right, slap on the wrist, don't do anything wrong, but come back on this day and we're investigating when we've had time to gather the other stuff we need. So half the time they do come back. It's quite common to be RUI'd.
You talked about hearing things that are worse than on TV, which kind of took me back a little bit, because in my head, obviously, TV is dramatised and it makes things over the top. And yeah, definitely shocked me. So, because everything you've explained to me so far feels very tiring to a certain extent. Was there ever parts where you doubted you wanted to be a police officer anymore?
Yeah. I'll be honest, even more so this last year during COVID, and also when I was off with anxiety.
I did doubt myself and whether I still had the inclination to do it. And it was more to do with me and my life and not the job in general, but it was just whether I can give 100% or whether I'm more capable of doing it. And it was doubting myself whether I could do it, because you do see some things. But I've ended up developing skin like a rhino, basically. I do not take it home with me.
Yeah.
I can shut it off. I come out of the police station and I'm Deb. I'm not officer, blah blah blah. You need to have that skill, basically, because if you took it home with you, you'd be constantly punishing yourself and wondering, I wonder what happened to him, I wonder what happened to her. And basically, when I walk back in the station, bang, I'm in that mode again, and I'm in work mode, and I get on with it. And hopefully the same people aren't there the next day, but it does happen. I do question it sometimes, even more so now, especially with COVID as well. That's not been a good friend to the Met, and a lot of officers have been affected by it, which means the other officers that are present work harder. So therefore, you've got a knock-on effect with that as well. And that implies in custody, not just on patrols, not just in different areas of the police. When you're short-staffed, you're short-staffed, and God, do you know about it.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Because I think one of the trickiest parts is I've talked to nurses, for example, and I think it can be one of the best and worst jobs at the same time, because you do get to see people at their worst, but at the same time, you get to see people recover from there.
Yeah.
And I remember there's this brilliant video where this woman wheelchairs towards a nurse. And then as the nurse is waving at her, the woman in the wheelchair stands up. She's actually able to walk again. And the nurse is crying. She's in tears. She's so happy because she's looked after this. And I think the hardest part for me, if I was to be in your position, is it would be so rare for me to see that kind of happy ending, because I think for you, unless I'm wrong, you will mainly only ever see people at their worst.
Yeah, I think it does tend to be more negative than positive. You very rarely see people walk away and find they're in the wrong, but you'll always hear people saying, "Oh, I've done nothing wrong." And as I said, if I had a pound, well, I'm not meant to be here. It weren't her. It weren't me. And it's you can imagine all the excuses under the sun. I've heard them all. And and half the time they don't remember, especially when they're drunk. You have to tell them why they're there. A lot of people could also be in shock. They don't believe you when you tell them what they've been charged with. And obviously then that goes to the lying aspect as well. They will lie, or they will try and pass the blame to someone else. But yeah, you do get some happy endings, but it's not a lot. It's quite a negative ending job, because obviously the custody part of it is more the end version before it gets handed over to court and things like that.
I don't know how much you'd be able to tell me if you could, but I'd love to hear like a happy ending story, because I think it must be quite rare.
Oh,
Yeah,
I didn't prep this question.
I know. Let me think. Happy endings, happy endings. Oh, I think it was the best one I can think of was a homeless guy who, no fault of his own, marriage breakdown, also ex-army, ended up getting help. Things he wouldn't have got on the street. Basically, he came in, he spoke to our mental health team, and they helped him basically not just get on his feet, but gave him things like we have an agency form.
Yeah,
I think if I'm right, it's called a Form 61, and they basically it's help of different agencies, everything from Gamblers Anonymous, AA, not road service, obviously the alcoholic stuff, and there are different agencies you could get and help you can get, even bereavement, anything you can think of which will help people for the reasons they've been admitted into custody and stuff or cross the police path. And this person I actually bumped into like a year later, and they were literally a job, a house. And I just remember giving him a big hug and getting upset. Yeah, you get.
Like, as someone who's homeless myself, like, even I'm like struggling to hold back a bit. So, because that must be, I think, I can imagine that being such a rewarding moment.
I didn't recognise him, and I felt guilty that I didn't recognise him. But
I think that's, I think that's a fantastic thing. If you change someone's life to the point that you didn't recognise them, I think that's only an achievement.
Yeah, and I remember obviously bumping to him in the street and actually wanting to do what I wanted to do while he was in custody, and I gave him a big hug. Yeah, it's great. I wish I'd stayed in touch with him, but obviously there's things that are inappropriate and conflict and stuff, but
yeah,
it was nice to see. So sorry about that. I'll wear my heart on my sleeve.
We can give you some tissue, but I think we're using it for the camera.
No, it's fine. But yeah, when you see things like that and you just go, do you know what? I made a difference. I contributed towards that. And it's the feel-good feelings. And I just remember thinking, do you know what? That's made my day. It's made my day, and it was on my day off. And I might not have even bumped into him. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and there he was. And I was like, wow, hello. And he's like, hello, miss, how are you doing? I'm like, wow.
Do you remember you?
He recognised me. I didn't recognise him. He recognised me straight away, which was pretty weird, actually, considering I didn't, you know. But yeah, he recognised me straight away, and my hair had grown a bit longer because it was short, but he recognised me. I think it was my gob, probably, because my voice is quite recognisable. But yeah, it was nice just to give him a hug, wish him well on his way. And yeah, that's the best bit of the job. Seeing good things happen to people, you know, because he was only stealing to basically feed himself. So yeah, and that knock-on effect, and literally a couple of years down the road, and bang, he's a proper citizen, so to speak.
I think it's such a nice story. One, because as I mentioned before, I don't think you get to see those happy endings.
No, you don't.
Because the happy endings is them not coming back to see you.
Exactly. I do have a little speech when they go, actually, and I actually say to them, and I go, all right, go on in, and they say, yeah, see you later, miss. I go, I bloody hope not. And they go, why? And I go, for all the best reasons, I'd like to say see you again, but I hope I don't. I said, you take care and everything, and I don't want to see you again. And they go, oh, you're all right, miss. Sometimes they shake your hand, sometimes they don't. But, I like to think that I'm remembered because I'm nice, and I actually get told I'm too nice. And I'll be honest, I've actually been told off for being too nice. And I'm like, but I'd rather be remembered for that than being remembered for being a complete cow bag. Because if I've helped them, and yes, I'm just doing my job that I'm getting paid for, it makes me feel good too. And it's not just... It's not done for a selfish reason, because I'm still being true to myself. I'm being me. There's no hidden agendas. I'm not wearing a mask. I go in and there's still an aspect of Deb there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't go in and turn into flipping, like, a complete fruit loop.
Not the Terminator.
No! God, no. Jesus Christ, no. No, it is... I have to have an aspect of your personality in there, because it makes you approachable. Because if you were a complete sourpuss and you were just, like, opening the wicket and talking to them and going, yeah, what do you want? Instead of, hello, love, all right, how you doing? What can I do for you? The difference, not just the words, the tone of voice, how you talk to someone, will interpret how you get that reply back. And it always, like, if people are rowing, a battle of volumes, if one of you calms down, the other one will calm down.
Yeah.
Because it's always, it builds and it gets out of control. And that's when, potentially, you can be in danger. Because if you're not nice to someone, when you have to get them out the cell, or you have to take them to see a doctor or solicitor or a practitioner, like, the mental health team, you don't turn your back on anyone. You tell them where to go. But if you've been horrible to someone, what's to say they don't take that opportunity to flip in when they're behind you? You just try and be as nice as you can, because you know if you're not, you're going to potentially, what's to say they don't lose their temper and they take it on you?
Yeah.
Because when they're in the cell, you've got the door between you. When you open that door, and they're there, and they're with you, they can use that as an opportunity to their advantage. So, going back to it, I always think it pays to be nice. Because I can't judge them. I don't know them. They've come in, they've done something wrong. Hopefully they'll get sorted for it, they'll get punished or whatever, but I stay true to myself. And it's held me in good stead, and I will continue to keep doing that.
Good. And I think, for me, I'd love to see that if I was arrested.
Yeah.
Which, hopefully, you won't see me.
No, I doubt it.
But I would like someone that would...
Someone to talk to.
Yeah. Because I think, for the most part, we're the heroes of our own story. And even if we do something wrong, we have a way of justifying in our head. So someone that can empathise with that and try and seek a way to fix whatever problem caused that is shockingly refreshing.
Mm.
And I think it's such a nice way. I don't think I can go on the podcast any longer, because I think that's such a nice, strong story to end it. And I think it's such a happy ending as well, because I think when we think about being arrested, it's only downhill we think about. We don't think about any possible recovery. So I think it's so nice to hear that, weirdly, this gentleman being arrested was a positive experience in the end.
It was for him, yeah, very much so.
Mm. I think it's incredible.
Mm.
Deb, I've super enjoyed speaking to you.
Oh, thank you, yeah.
It's been really nice.
I've ended up in tears. Well, all right, it's been fun. What a great morning.
I have been holding it back.
Oh, no, I did notice you gloss over, Andrew, don't
we? Yeah, no, I started having a little man tear, and I wouldn't get back up in there.
Because
I got a camera facing me.
Yeah, you're only human, as you said. It's normal.
Is there anything you'd like to say before we end the podcast? Putting you on the spot again.
Oh, behave or I'll see you later.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thanks very much. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Brilliant. And that brings us to the end of our podcast. I would firstly like to thank you for listening. Take care. Remember to hug your children. And always remember that there is someone there to give you a helping hand.